After I left here on a Friday night, I had, you can call it two visions. You know, you have to program your mind with something to be able to keep your stability toward understanding. So you can title it visions. You can call it visions, whatever. A vision or whatever, both of them was a genuine experience. And if you want to say vision, well, you can say vision or whatever. But I had been seeking the Lord off and on through the night. I get up and down quite a bit, maybe to get water or whatever, but I'm trying to go right back to praying. And while I was seeking the Lord on a Friday night, I had an experience. I've been talking to the Lord quite a little bit here lately because of the opposition that we've got outside and the boycott of the people, praying to God that God would keep my people from being injured or being hurt, and asking God to drive back the demon powers that are closing in to try to hurt the people or to injure the cause of God. And I can truthfully say that I believe the reason for this is that we have become so unconcerned and negligent toward the work of God and keeping it thorough and explicit. I believe this is why Satan has got a lick at us, to rise up and to boycott the way he has. But nevertheless, the Bible said if your ways please God, he'll make your enemies to be at peace with you. And on a Friday night, I was here. I left here, I went home to pray, as usual. Something unusual had happened that day. One of the things, I'd been down at Brother Taylor's house. I'd been in there for an hour or so, I guess, trying to make a telephone call, trying to get through to one or two places to where we could keep things straight, clearing up some mess that the devil had made. One time here we cleared up, then he makes another mess, we have to clear it up somewhere else. I said the other day, he does that to decoy us, to pull us away from our main objective of winning souls, taking all of our time for the elementary side of things. Now, I was down there, it was hot, sweaty, there was no cooler. I lost so much water or fluids through sweating and perspiration until it was really bad. Well, I finally come out. When I come out, came on up to the church. Some of you noticed that I was drinking water here. I kept drinking quite a bit of water. I'd been perspiring for a number of days with an unusual perspiration and lost water. And but anyway, I went to pray. That night I went to pray, and over through the night I was praying and talking to the Lord. Way over in the morning sometimes, this experience apparently took place. I noticed that through the night I had been extremely dry. Just dry, so dry. And I'd get up, get some water, and in a little while it'd be just like I was to start with. So, I just got a little aggravated with getting up and getting water, and I finally just determined in my heart, well, I'm just not going to mess with the water. You know, if my tongue cleaves to the roof of my mouth, it'll just have to cleave to it. I'm not going to get up. So with that, I began to resist it, and maybe for a while here and a while there, and it went on for quite a while. And then all of a sudden something happened, and I went off into this experience. And I found myself, as it would be, whether outside of a beautiful garden like, or whether it's outside of a house or what, I couldn't tell. I didn't see any garden. I didn't see anything. But I could tell that if I was sitting like you looking this direction, that over to your left, which would be to my right, there was a cot, there was a bed, a double cot, and Looked like it was elevated a little and turned about at this angle. And I found myself laying down on that bed in the vision. I looked, and Brother Jimmy Watts came up on the other side, and he was white like a ghost, but it's like somebody had embalmed him. He didn't have any color to his face at all. And he'd get over near this little bed like he was going to have to lay down, and then he'd get frantic, and he'd jump up. All of a sudden, he'd jump up, and he'd run. Or I say jump up. He never did really lay down. He'd start to lay down and jump back and kind of run off, kind of frantic-like. Whereas it appeared that the bed indicated death. I was already laying on it. Jimmy would get close to it, and it was just as though he was dying and had to yield up life. And every time he'd just go to lay down, he'd get frantic, and he'd pull away. And Jimmy motioned like this, "Come with me." So I rose from the bed. I come around this way. I circled around this way like, went off down this way. When I did, that is, I went off to my left. As I went down in that direction, now I had gotten up from the bed, I had moved forward, and I had went out around like that to my, it would have been to my right as I lay on the bed, be to my left as I stand here. Ran to the left, I went a little ways, and I looked off to my right, and it was elevated down a little bit. When I looked off to my right, it was a graveyard. And I saw Sister Watts and maybe a daughter or two, children, walking to the graveyard across like this. Whereas when I went around, I was standing facing the graveyard just like I am here. As I stood and looked, I saw them moving to my right. All of a sudden, I didn't see Jimmy. He was gone. I don't know just where he went to, but he was gone. Then I started down into the graveyard, and when I started down, it was as though a light radiated from me, seemingly from my head part. But a light began to radiate from me as I went down into the graveyard. And as I went down into the graveyard, I began to scream out that this is the resurrection. This is the resurrection. Get out of the graves. Get out of the graves. This is the resurrection. And all of a sudden, the graves burst open and people began to come out of the graves. And I noticed that there was a number of young fellows that began to break forth from the grave. So then I seemingly passed on through the graveyard. It was getting dark. Darkness had done begin to fall over the graveyard. And I moved on through the graveyard over to the, seemingly to the far end where I didn't see the tombstones, and it was more like I had went into an enclosure of some kind, but I couldn't be for sure. I know I was still on my feet in the dark, and then I was turned in a direction that I was looking back in the direction that I had come. Off to my left, which would be to my right as I stand here facing you, off to my left, I felt an evil force, an unusual evil force that began to press down upon me. And when it did, I turned to face it, and there was a boldness that came over me, a fearlessness came over me, to where there was absolutely no fear whatsoever. And I turned to meet the thing head on, and I seemed to have in my hand like a tri-square or cross that seemed to be 2 or 3 feet long. And I was going to battle with it or fight the thing that was approaching me with that. Whereas it is a true fact that there has been numbers of time where death come to seize me, and I knew that it was death. And what I'm about to say is a hard thing, an impossible thing for one to do unless God's in it. But I have been to where death was going to take me, and I would just at the last minute, I'd just scream out and say, "I challenge you to take me. I challenge you. If you think you can kill me, kill me. I challenge you to do it. And in every case, I won out. Right at the last minute when I was dying, numbers of occasions. But in this particular instance, this happened to me, and I began to scream out, I challenge you to do it. I challenge you to do it. And with great faith and boldness, I walked in the direction of the evil. As I met it head on, I walked in the direction of it, really desiring it to show itself because I wanted to battle with it. And as I did, I went off just a little ways, and it seemed that there was a curve like this in the room or whatever, and when or just around it, there was a door. When I got to that place, I noticed my strength begin to leave me, and all of my strength was going from me, and I could tell what was happening because I've had this to happen numbers of times. All of my strength was leaving, and I was right down. I was getting weaker and weaker, and I suddenly realized that I had come to the same place that I'd come to numbers of times, where just before I crossed over, I mastered the situation and was able to retain enough strength to recuperate. Well, as the Bible said, at death, no man hath power over the spirit to retain it. No man. So I felt my spirit leaving. I felt my strength leaving. And I could tell that I had gone as far as I could, that I had reached that place that I always reach, to where at that point, if God didn't undertake, then I had no power to hold on to my strength, that it was the borderline. And it didn't stop as it usually did. And I realized all of a sudden it was death that I was battling with. But it didn't stop. It didn't yield up. Nor did I master it in that way at that particular moment like I had before. And all of a sudden, my strength got beyond that borderline. That is, it left to the extent that I crossed over that borderline to where I still had, I retained some strength, but it was beyond the point of human control. There was no way to revive or recuperate. So I knew it was death, and I felt it leave, and it continued to leave till all my strength was gone. All my life was gone. Everything was gone. I had completely crossed over. The Bible said the body without the spirit is dead, and I knew that I had departed the body and that the only life I retained was that of the spirit being there in that place to be knowledgeable of what was going on. So I turned to my left, and I walked just a little ways, and then it seemed to curve off to the left about like that. And I stood there for a minute, and I said, well, I've crossed over. And all of a sudden, as I stood there, I said, I died. I said, I died, and death has claimed me. And then a misty-looking sickle began to form. You've seen this, they call the Father Time sickle, the great blade. I've used them when I was a boy, you know, out in the field cutting down terraces or cutting terraces off. Death sometime with that cloaked figure, you see him carry this long blade, this sickle. Well, anyway, that long sickle began to form in my right hand. I began to look, and there it was. It began to form in my right hand, just in a misty appearance. It began to come out and form. And it formed in my hand, and I knew that death had completely claimed me. So the first thing that I said, the first thing, something just strikes and goes all the way through you. And I said, dead, I've crossed over the end. I've got to go to the judgment. And then the way that you will try to assure yourself, you know, that everything's all right, I said, grace will take care of it. Grace will take care of it. And then in the shadows, because it was still dark, the whole episode was dark, in the shadows to my left, I heard somebody very tenderly say, no, I'm sorry, son, but you will be judged according to your works. And he assured me that people must be judged according to their works. I then, with that, turned around to go back this way, the way that I had come. When I turned around, as I started back, I said, well, I'm dead. I crossed over, and I was waiting to see what the results would be. It was still dark. And I said, I have crossed over, and I said, I was in my room. And tomorrow morning, I said, Betty and the children, they're going to find my body laying there. It's still laying there in the room where I left it. And they're going to find my body laying there, and they're going to be terrorized, and they're going to be all disturbed and all tore up. And I thought, well, I can't do nothing about it. I can't tell them. I can't get back. I can't say nothing to them. You know, there was no communication from there to where they were. And it was still dark. So, in that, unawares, as I had walked, I had apparently gotten near the same door that I had come through. Whereas in the vision, or whatever you want to call it, I didn't see any door. And it didn't even occur to me about the door until after I had come out of the experience. But afterwards, I thought about it. But I had apparently approached the same door that I'd gone through. Being dark, I didn't see anything. And there, as I pondered on it, I thought, no, this is bad to let Betty and him do that, you know. And I thought, well, they'll get over it. They'll get over it. It'll take some time, but they'll get over it. And then all of a sudden, something seemed to strike me that seemed to change my entire thinking and my mind altogether. And I said, no. I said, I'm not going to stay here. Death is not going to keep me. Death can't hold me. I'm not going to stay here. I'll just resurrect myself. I'm just not going to stay here. But I didn't have any strength. I didn't have any way. I didn't have nothing that I could do, not anything. I was helpless. But one thing that prevailed in my behalf, this that prevailed was the name of Jesus. That was all, just the name of Jesus. I just left off talking with Jesus, and all of a sudden the name of Jesus struck my mind. And I said, Jesus, that's what I'll do. I'll hold to the name of Jesus. And I'll come out of this, and I'll overcome death, and I'll resurrect myself, and I'll go back. I'll do it by the name Jesus. And as I got ready to do that, I didn't have no strength. But because of the name Jesus coming to my mind, I felt just a little bit of something coming from somewhere as I thought on his name. You know, I remember the Bible said, when you've done all you can to stand, stand therefore. Be strong in the power of my might, he said. And let the weak say, I'm strong, strong in my strength, Jesus said. So I began to take that and hold on to that. And sure enough, all of a sudden, there was a little tiny bit of strength that seemed to come from the other world where I'd left and began to come to me. Just a little tiny strength. And I felt a little bit, but I thought, well, this still won't do it because I had some strength even after I crossed over, and it wasn't to my benefit because it wasn't enough to make me cross back over. And finally, all of it had left me. So I said, I feel a little returning here, but it's not enough to get me over. And then all of a sudden, with all of the effort that I could muster from the little bit of strength that I had received, I just grasped the name Jesus and pressed into it, and something began to happen, and all of a sudden I felt myself changing. I apparently went back through that door, and I found myself in my room. Now, the strange part about this, as pertaining to the scriptural meaning of what I see in it, was I was praying just before this happened. And the prayer that I was praying was, Father, let me know thee in the fellowship of thy suffering, being made conformable unto thy death. And the flesh was crying out, no, no, you don't pray like that. Don't pray like that. No, you're foolish. But that's the prayer that I prayed down through the years. And I was praying. And I said, Lord, my flesh draws back. My human reason says no 1,000 times. No, I don't want that. But I said, irregardless to how I think or what I feel, it has nothing to do with it. My heart says yes, that's the way I want it. I want you to overrule my mind, my feelings, my humanistic side, all together. I want to know thee in the fellowship of thy suffering, being made conformable to thy death. And with that, I never said anything about knowing him in the power of his resurrection, though I've prayed like that before. Paul said that I might know you in the power of your resurrection. That was a pray, pray. Well, apparently, something happened. Something happened because I apparently reached a point to God's satisfaction or achieved something in the conquering of the flesh, in that I was thinking about the crucifixion and submitting to it in my mind and heart, saying, Lord, I wish it had been me instead of Jesus. Whether it be nails or whether it be wooden pegs in my hands or whatever, that's the way I want it. And I'd had a vision or two in the past where they had done me that way. So I was thinking on this and submitting to it. Whereas the Bible said, they that belong to God have crucified the flesh with the lust and the affections thereof, that they mortify the deeds of the body. And as I prayed after this manner, I went off into this experience. As I went off into this experience, then these things happened to me. And sure enough, apparently I went down into his death and was made conformable to that extent. And I also, by faith in God, knew him in the power of his resurrection in the experience because I came out. And when I come out of this experience, I immediately had another experience, or what you would call a vision. Now I looked, and it was a shadowy hand like coming at me, and I knew it was Jesus. I knew it was his hand. I looked beyond that, and I saw a man standing, like over here in an open doorway, like that. And he was standing there, kind of sideways, looking at me like that. And when I saw him, I became real excited and began to scream out. And as I did, I began to come out of the vision. When I began to come out of the vision, I looked in the room and he was still there. But as I came out of the vision, then he vanished away. Both of them together was similar to the vision that I had had down in Florida. Now, I'm going to say this in connection with that. Brother Taylor has to do with the law and with Moses, whereas Brother Taylor tries his best to be faithful. Even as it was said of Moses, he was faithful in all of his house. But the law follows a pattern of death. And from the time that Brother Taylor came with me, over in not Olive Branch, Mississippi, but Tennessee, just over from Olive Branch, there at a place, a tabernacle, he was there with us, a place called Winchester. Probably remembers it real well. Right there is where the whole thing started concerning the revelation. From that time that he came, it was as though a death fell over my ministry. I started having one problem right after another from there all the way to the Carolinas. Everywhere people struck at my ministry, things happened. I was called into questions. It was a continual thing. Well, this went on for a number of years until just a few months back. And I told some of them, I said, at this point, there's a change. I said, a break. The law hath no more control over it. And numbers of things happened. If you recall, a number of things took place that indicated this. I pointed it out. Some of it's on tape. I pointed it out to different ones how that this thing took place by types and shadows. And with this hall meeting, with this Tennessee meeting, I had made the statement that the children would come in. Whereas I'd made the statement a few months back that the time was at hand for that, the change was there. And they had started to frequent the churches just a little bit here and there. Well, I said, now, I told Betty, I said, strange as it seems, this has to do with the children. And I told them, I said, they'll come in. So sure enough, as you know, when we come back from hall meeting, all of the children came. Just about every one of them was sitting there, having to do with a nation born in a day. That's what it had to do with. I made that statement. Among the Jews, which my family typifies, among them, they accept the Messiah as a whole. When they accept Christ, they accept it unanimously. When they lay it down, they lay it down unanimously. And sure enough, Rick, the first news that I understood, he had been praying, asking God to save his soul. He had come to a crossroads. Something had happened to him. He got all nervous and tore up. And today, other than just shaping up a little bit and a few things that he hath yet to do, Ricky is trying to serve the Lord. He's coming here to fasten himself steadfast with us to help us in the work of the Lord, which has a great meaning that we'll relate in just a few minutes. Now, at the same time, David quit smoking. Frank Beretta quit smoking. Frank come to me and said, George, I've got to do something. Said, me and my wife has declared that we've got to serve God. Said, we've lost our sense of direction. Said, we've got to have a heavenly intervention and we've got to have some help. Said, somehow or another. And he said, we've been trying to shape my lives with the Lord. Cynthia, she came. Susie, she came. And as far as I know, Susie is down there trying her best from day to day now to help in the offices and get straightened out with God. She said she diligently wanted to get straight with God. And I had a vision a night or two ago that Cindy and Raph was back together. And somebody else also had a vision of it, and they were getting along real good. Whereas Raph has told me that he wanted to serve the Lord and Cynthia also. Now, said all that to say this, that with this happening, Brother Taylor had been left. I felt sure Brother Taylor would be held up over in Hall, and he had been left over there for a week or two. Dwight being with him, having to do with the trumpet and whatever, and Brother Kim Williams being with him, that also had to do with the type and the shatter of the pattern that he and Dwight and Frank follows. His name being Williams has to do with the same type bust that Ricky had concerning Brother Branham, the one that he traded for the Greyhound. Now, with this, Brother Taylor being held up, Sister Linda was not able to go to her office, so Susie went to the office, whereas it's really Susie's office, and Linda was setting it up for her. Would ask Linda to set the office up for her and Brother Taylor. Susie came back, took her office in their absence, and Betty went out and began to work in the office. Well, this changed the entire setting, the entire picture, the whole thing. And as I said, the experience that I encountered was having been in Brother Taylor's trailer during this time of the perspiration. I came from there. I came up here. When I come up here, I led the children in singing, something I've never done. While I was leading, I had Brother Fontaine to come up. And Brother Fontaine took it. I can't remember the last song I led him in. But anyway, Brother Fontaine come up, which had to do with the fountain opening, the house of David, the Jewish thing. Brother Taylor working with the people over there, the city ordinances, submitting a nation born in one day. Everything that happened that night was pointing to the experience. Brother Taylor and the children of Israel, it had been that way. Then that night it had to do with the crossing of the Jordan and the children. So that night we had the experience, that same night. Now, when Frank came to be with us, or at this particular instance at Winchester, my brother Charles had taken sick. We had come out of Tucson, Arizona, because we had seen him in a vision. We come to Winchester. When we got to Winchester, my brother died. Charles died. At that time, I had a vision of Ricky, George Jr. He was just a young boy. Ricky had died or got killed. He was laying on the side of the road, and he had rotten, burst open, and corruption had set in. Just prior to this, I had seen Rick. We were out in the desert. I saw him in a vision. He got away from me as a little boy and got behind a door. When he did, the wolves come out of the desert and eat him up before I could get to him. From that time on, a rebellion set in on him. He went contrary. The wolves seemingly devoured him. He'd done everything but that which was right. Spiritual corruption set in. It was at the same time that Brother Taylor came with us. Death indicating death by the law. And this continued. Charles died. But at the same time, it was there that I contacted Brother Branham. He was at Charles at the Methodist Hospital, Brother Branham in the wilderness of Kentucky. Brother Branham came to the phone. It was there that it had to do with the handkerchief. He prayed over the handkerchief for me to lay it on my brother Charles. And Charles got the handkerchief, but somehow the nurses, in changing the bedclothes, moved the handkerchief. Now, Charles died. Afterwards, Brother Branham came to Jack Moore's place over in Louisiana. It was there that we contacted Brother Branham again, told him about the death of my brother. And I've always had faith in what Brother Branham said, or a man of God. So I told him what happened. I said, Brother Branham, I still believe God will raise him from the dead. I said, just come on up here, pray. I said, you said he'd live. And but Brother Branham backed off. He backed off. He began to tell me how that a disease such as Bright's disease could cripple, what it could do to a person, and maybe it was for the best. The Lord said it was for the best, took Charles, and those kind of things. Whereas I let it go. But during our conversation of talking, I had made the statement to Brother Branham. He had asked me something. Our conversation went on for a good little while. And I said, well, Brother Branham, I tell you the truth. If there was anything that I would want, it would be a double potion of what you've got. Now, from that time on, Brother Branham took a different outlook toward us. And he said, you know, he said, I'll come by your place the next time I come. Now, I believe that when I talked to him maybe in Louisiana, it was the second time. He had been down there and then he'd come back. But whatever, he said, if I had known that you was there, from wherever he was talking to me, if I'd have known you was there, I would have come by this time. But the next time I come, I'll come by your place. From that time, death seemed to set in with my brother Charles. Strangely enough, at this meeting over in Hall, about 3 o'clock in the morning, we got up, we got the water off of the tent, we was watching the tent, and this is kind of a radical change in our thoughts here, but if you listen, you can piece it together. There at the tent, I had watched this side of the tent because it kind of pocketed it a little. I knew the rain would get it and burst the tent through. So I was praying over the morning about 3 o'clock, and sure enough, the heavy rain came and it pocketed. Maybe 50 or 100 gallons of water or more got on the tent. I got up and went out in the night, and I was getting it off, and had gotten some of it off when it awoke the others, and some of them came out. No one that night seemingly had been watching the tent. I went back, and then I had this vision of Prince Charles's marriage. It appeared that that's what it was, because in the vision I saw, as it was, cadets or soldiers marching through the town with all boldness and a lot of prestige, and like nobody can get in our way, you know. They better get out of our way. They were dressed in gold. I looked off a little ways, and there was 3 or 4 standing here that was dressed in black suits with a little white cap with a black bill to, or a little black cap with a black bill with white intermingled with the on some parts of the cap and on the clothing. I had this vision about that. When I saw the paper later, they were dressed exactly that way. And that very morning, about that time, according to the time change over in Europe or wherever, they were getting married. So I had actually had a vision of the marriage. I had spoke to Betty about Prince Charles when we were in Canada, when we confronted a brother that had a church there and told him he needed to get right with God. Some of you remember the occasion. Whereas it proved out later that the brother was not right with God. I told him he wasn't, and he left his family and his flock and everything else, and went bad with it. But I saw this wedding of Prince Charles in this vision, or saw this happening. The vision, I was supposed to be there at it, but I couldn't go because it seemed like I was running late and that I didn't have a uniform to wear. Then all of a sudden, I said, I'm going into this room, and I walked off from where the soldiers were. I went into this room, and it was supposed to be a place of rest. When I got there, I felt somebody come up behind me, and I heard a couple of voices, and they said in a real low tone, Brother Pike. And they came up behind me, and they began to put a uniform on me, a very beautiful, light, silkish uniform, reddish looking, which apparently had to do with the blood of Jesus or the blood covering that was to make me ready to attend that meeting, Charles's meeting, which or marriage, which apparently had to do with the marriage of the Lamb. I'd made a statement when Betty and I had drove over to Canada from this certain place in New York, that that's what it had to do with and that Charles would rise to the throne. And it was a long time back that they would change that thing from a woman rule over there. Whereas as one of our leading ministers said, he's going to wait and see if that happened. But it will. And it hasn't happened yet, but it will. So with this marriage, Brother Taylor was held up over in Hall. That was a strange meeting. We went through a place humble, like you bolt a door through a gate, a bolted gate unlocked into a hall. We was there about 3 days. Pilate's Judgment Hall, the place that we were in last night, it all was together. And I went back through the same place coming out. The law conquered. The city yielded, coming back with the keys to the city. When Jesus rose from the dead, he said, I'm the resurrection and the light. Life, I have the keys to death and to hell. I was dead, but yet I'm alive forevermore. Coming back from that place, something happened. And there was a number of different kind of denominations, Brother Branham following, all kind of people that was there, Methodists, Baptists, I was told that, the mayor, the police. About 3 days, I felt that I'd leave, and I did. I come back. Now, I said all that to try to make a point or to say this. I come a route I had never come before. Never in all of my travels of going over to Mississippi or Tennessee, never have I ever at any time went through the route that I traveled. I traveled a cross-country route. Brother Taylor being up there, us coming back, having to do with the resurrection, the boycott, the overcoming, pulling the people out of the bushes, as we say. That is to say, at the end of the millennium, Lucifer with Gog and Magog, he gathers them all together to come up against Jerusalem. Fire comes down out of heaven and devours them. We're at the end of the American government or the capitalistic government. America, a type of the millennium. The Jews are now starting their war cry. And at the end of this millennium, we see the type. War in heaven, in that we see the conflict among the pilots and the thing that's taking place with the air travel across the nation, which is causing international crisis. And strangely enough, having to do with Israel's, our travel, having to do with our air travel, 1, 2, 3. The whole situation is that they are rising up because of that which is the air. That is war in heaven, the middle of the week. And there was war in heaven and Lucifer was cast down. Now, the whole thing is showing the end of the world. The whole thing is showing the man-child ruling with a rod of iron. We had said that when Jimmy went out, we said that Reagan had to do with the Christ part of it. He'd rule with a rod of iron. He's done it in every instance. Now, with this, we've learned that the same planes that America refused to let Israel have, their best planes, now they're having trouble with that plane and they've had to ground every one of them. They give Israel trouble with her air travel. America now has trouble with her air travel. The air travel indicates the rapture, the translation, the change. Some is rejecting it. Some says no airplane. Some says no air travel. At that time of the middle of the week, Lucifer went out. He went out. He personified himself. Revelation 13, he comes up out of the water. He personifies himself, and he's no longer hid. Now, I made the statement the other night, and it's going to take a few more minutes to finish what I'm saying so it'll make sense. The other night, I made the statement, Satan, Lucifer, dwells in the flesh. He savors the things that be of the natural, of the flesh, and that's all he cares for. He has for many thousands of years tried to work a thing to a systematic order to where he could be supreme control. He has done this through humanity one generation right after another. Man himself doth not have a lifespan long enough to benefit him to do a thing like that. So then it would be no point in him doing it. But Lucifer convinces him while he's young that he's alive and he can just do anything. You know, he's got plenty of time. Too late, he learns different as age catches him. Now, Lucifer has worked everything cunningly to where he is. He now has control of the air travel to that extent. He has all the time had control of the money in the bank. That is to say, the government has control of the money. We borrow it from a middleman. We pay more for it. They get it at one interest rate. We get it at another. Satan has cunningly worked this. He has caused you to have to pay income taxes. He has caused you to have to buy little old stickers and permission for your trailers to get control of your homes. He has forced an issue on the children of going to school. He has, in every way, if you'll check up, he has in every way possessed you as a human being and has taken control of you. And it's now that he has in a partial manner here and there, proportionally speaking, a little here and a little there, having possessed you by doing something over here and something over here in part, doing it that way so that you wouldn't notice it. Doing it so that it wouldn't be an all-over thing lest you rise up in rebellion. He has gradually, bit by bit, subdued humanity. Having it all together to that extent, it has to do with the temple of Solomon or the body of the Lord Jesus Christ, the membership that will all come together to the head. In the days of Solomon, they made a piece over here and a piece of the temple over yonder. At the right time, they brought it all together. Antichrist does the same cunning thing by using the wisdom of God to that extent. Communism is nothing but a man having known the Bible, following the things of the Bible and perverting it, Lucifer. Now, Satan seeks to bring all of that together. Every part that he hath perfected to his own evil benefit, he's going to bring it together pull it all together under a computerized system to where he has one brain, can control it, because his excommunication from heaven will make him, as John said, come up out of the waters, that is among the people, waters being people, to take on a human personification of Judas that he'll bring back from the dead, or whatever, a body that he will bring back. He will personify himself in it. At that time, he will draw everything to himself through a computerized control, a computerized system, and he will have mass humanity at his control. And just as all of this starts maturing, and I know what you're thinking, I picked it up just as quick as your thoughts came. But when all of this comes together, fittingly comes together, as it comes together, just at the moment he fits it all together, the church will translate. The message of the revelation is for that purpose. Now, still going to take a few minutes. In this, right at this time, Lucifer is ready to close in. He's ready to possess and personify and take control. Everything is set up for it. They're going to learn that paperwork won't work. They're going to have to get rid of their paperwork, use a computerized number, run that thing down. We said a long time ago that they'd have to do away with the paperwork, do away with the monetary system of paper, use a computerized system, and so far they've learned that only one number can work among the people. They found out that only one number this far will work, and that's the number 666, that it will work for everybody. Now, they're going to do this, and that is those that confederate with Satan. He's going to do it, and just as he gets it all together, the church will translate. Whereas at this point, Israel rising up, it has to do with that. They'll drive Israel out of their homeland, just like they're rising up against us right here. Because Israel being driven out of their homeland for the time and a half of time has to do with that 3 days that Jesus was in the heart of the earth. That is, the man-child being caught up, Israel left to themselves, and at that time the woman driven out into the wilderness. But Israel will return after that period of time, the resurrection, Jesus the head, will come back. They'll occupy the city. He'll sit on the throne of David, and he'll have supreme control. Right at this time, Israel rising up, it's just right for the confederation of the nations and for them to do that. At that point, Lucifer will have control to personify, to work it all to a central point, a centralized government. Whereas we will at that time have come together as the body of Jesus, be changed instantly according to Thessalonians into that translating body, the celestial body. Now, with this, getting back to the Prince Charles thought, with this, when Prince Charles came in for the marriage, Rick came back in, that is George Jr., revived back to life, as we say. Just before the Holy One sees corruption, which is the body of Jesus, I saw decay already trying to set in. Rick was already beginning to rot. Now, spiritually speaking, he's done about everything he could do, everything but serve God. Spiritual decay was about to set in. His marriage to his wife, we brought out a number of times, has to do with Brother Branham's following, has to do with Brother JT that represents it, the inheritance that JT's considering right now. And Rick coming in has to do with Brother Branham's following coming in. Whereas at the hall meeting, different meetings had started coming in. They were at our meeting. As a rule, Brother Branham's people don't follow nobody's ministry. But nevertheless, they were at our meeting over in Tennessee there, just out of Memphis, and when we got to Hall, they were back again for our meeting. They've been in a number of our meetings. Now, coincidentally or not, there's been a number of meetings here. They've come here. They usually just go on something and go on their way. But this has got them highly troubled. They ask questions. They want to find any brother that will tell them something about it. And they're wanting to talk to me. They're trying their best to get to me to talk to me about something. But anyway, Charles's marriage, the resurrection of my brother Charles having to do with George Jr. The yoke of death being broken, Brother Taylor standing over yonder like he did. That also indicating the law going back to the Jews. Frank said they really need a shepherd. They're pleading for this ministry and for help. They're hungry. Now, it also has to do with the mansion that Brother Taylor was going to paint and didn't paint. Waited 6 days, was it, for the material? Now, The man that operates the funeral parlor lives in the mansion. He tried to force Brother Taylor to paint it because of the motor that was in his car. $1,200 job. He wanted him to do it for $400. Brother Taylor, being forced into the place he was going to do it, waited 6 days, and God didn't stuff the man to get the material, so he came home. But anyway, getting back to the main theme of our thought here so we can bring it to a close. With the marriage, I was supposed to be there. There, I felt them slipping this uniform on me when I had this vision at home. And I knew that I wasn't going to be late, that I was going to get there in time. Whereas, when they did this, I thought, now I'm in a room to where it calls for rest. And they're slipping this on me, and it feels like they're kind of tucking it under my arm like you would a pillow. When I came out of the vision or whatever, I said, Lord, you're telling me that that's my death. When I get back, that's what you're telling me. So I didn't mention it to Betty. I didn't mention it to the children. Didn't mention it to any of them. I just told the vision. Didn't mention nothing about it. I waited. When I come home, I thought, well, I'll see. At any rate, I told them that it completed a cycle. Joe Cabela coming like he did. The Mount Carmel thing, because that's where Joe was at. The Indiana thing, that's where the German scholar rose up. I had to rise over him and prove that he was wrong. That was where we prayed for the lady with the TB, and she was healed. There in the hospital, a woman dying. Joe Cabela's was at that place. And Joe, all of a sudden, shows up. Ending a cycle, a completion of something, to make a change for the third part of my ministry to come in, which was to be the third and last part of it that George Jr. represented. David represented a part of it. Junior represented a part of it. Different ones, there's several that represented it. At this point, it was to represent the Joshua move where you saw my people, some of them got weary, and in the vision, I renewed my youth. I took my youth and went on over into Canaan, as we say. Now, George Jr. represented that. The vision they saw the other night of me ministering to the ministers. I was about 30-something years old. I had a mustache. I said, I believe it has to do with George Jr. And right at this time, the ministers are just ready to find a shepherd. They are just ready. We had had the vision years ago where at the end of the day, the people had been fed thoroughly. There was a big table prepared, and the ministers were hungry, and they came to be fed. And this was the vision that Brother Grady, I believe, had the other night. So, it was in agreement with what we had because it was at the end of the day. Now, I came back from up there waiting to see what would happen. Then, all of a sudden, I had this experience. Over the Jordan, back, and conquering death through the name Jesus. Elisha went over the Jordan. He had to go over the Jordan to get the mantle, and then he came back with it. If he had not been able to come back over the Jordan, he could not have had the mantle. But the mantle is what caused him to be able to come back over the Jordan, because he was heir to the mantle, in that Elijah had walked by where he was plowing and throwed it over to him, like this, as we would say, there at the oxen. Now, he was heir to the mantle. He had the mantle to that extent. He went over the mantle, hoping him get back across. Now, I said that to say this, that Christ What's the mantle? Jesus had to go over like Elijah. Elisha had to come back, which had to do with the membership of his body, the church, which denotes in the natural the Jew, which gets the double portion, because at the change of the body, when we get our double portion, we go out, and the Jews represent us in the earth by remaining. We have a spiritual portion. At the change, we'll get a bodily portion. It'll take us out. The Jews will remain because they'll get the seal of the double portion. Now, in this, Jesus, by means of the mantle, which is Christ, that dead body, Jesus, had to come back across the Jordan as Elisha. That body went away to show the Elisha in the earth. Carrying Christ within you, the mantle, the hope of glory. So, having power over death, having the mantle, Christ within you, the hope of resurrection, for he is the resurrection and the life, the name that I called on, come back over the Jordan. That's the way Jesus did it. He come back from the dead. It had never been done before, never in the history of mankind. Jesus is the only one that ever resurrected himself from the dead. No man living has ever done it before. Paul the apostle, who represented Christ in the earth, is the only record where you'll find that anything of that type is even indicated. He said, God chose me to reveal Christ in my life. That is, through my sufferings you will see Jesus, because he was a man of sorrow and suffering, being thrown into prison because he had thrown people into prison. He had to reap it. Stoned to death and left for dead because he stood and gave consent to it when they stoned Stephen's to death. Paul's spirit, apparently departing from his body, being left for dead, went up into the third heavens, saw the things that was not permitted for others to see, came back with the mantle, as we say, to bring it from the Jews to the Christian side of it, the Christ side of it, because Jesus had gone into the heavenlies with the Father. He brought that to this church, as we say. You know what happened here a while back about the priest, about Canada, about the crown, about the Pope, the shooting, and what had to do with Macon when he came up and he put that thing around my neck. And right now he's in Macon, the priest, and right now the Macon Telegraph is wanting to come here to do a story on us, whereas we spoke of the government shifting back to Macon, what it had to do with the capital. Now, you remember how we conquered that at the Capitol when we went up there through faith? When they confronted us right here in the Capitol, when we confronted them and we finally won out. And how that we won out in Washington to the extent that the senator also called down here. But the Capitol here in the state of Georgia, we won out the same way. We won out at Fort Knox, Kentucky in the same way. Now, it is a true fact that right at this point, George Jr. coming in is a typical thing of Jesus coming to the membership of the body of Bethlehem. Jesus getting ready to return to the Jews to fight the nations of the world. The world receiving a head, Antichrist. Everything coming to the headship at this time, to a centralized point. An object. It has not been my spiritual endeavor that has wilted and died here at Bethlehem to that extent. It has been my brotherhood of sisters and brothers, the unconcern of the functioning and care for the things of God. Therefore, George Jr. is a typical head to that body, as the Son that doeth always the things that please the Father, to do exactly what I tell him to do, to bring life back to the membership and concern, back to the body, toward world evangelism and Christian endeavor. Joshua, going into Canaan, did not have a new system. They had the best system it could be given. God had given it. And it was said to Joshua by Moses, "See that you do everything, Joshua, exactly the way that I've told you, and according to the pattern shown me in the mountain," all these things. So it's not the system, it's the membership. There's nothing wrong with Christianity. There's nothing wrong with Jesus Christ, who's the head of the church. The problem is with the church, the membership. They're the ones that have died out that he's got to come back to and resurrect. Now, I saw in a vision where Brother Taylor had fallen across me in my world outreach, and it stopped it. Whereas this honestly considered and believe, the meaning of it was that right at the time, in the vision, it was just at the very moment when I was going to score a world victory that he fell across me. This, I feel, has to do with Brother Taylor representing the law. Death fell across the path of Jesus. But in this vision, I saw a babe rise up in front of me on the other side of Brother Taylor, and he hit a home run, took a ball, and hit a home run as a baby that went all the way around the world. I saw the ball go this way and went all the way around the world. I watched it go all the way around the world and then back to little Bethlehem. I believe that it had to do with the law, and I can tell that this ain't setting too well with somebody, but nevertheless, it's the truth. God did it. You'll have to talk to him about it. I didn't have nothing to do with it. If there's a dispute, you'll have to dispute with him over it. But anyway, this happened. Death had started at Winchester. The results of it was the babe was born, for out of the death of Jesus came the babe. The babe that scored the world victory. Now, Rick, just a babe in the Lord, being caught up to the throne like the seven candlesticks. Having to do with the natural functioning of this thing to get it coordinated, to get it to go on, that we might carry on the spiritual thing. He is determined to work with me to get this thing straightened out to where we can score a world victory. And I believe the one thing it majorly had to do with, I've had mail held up since January. I have pleaded with different ones. Brother Gary, I pleaded with him and his companion. I pleaded with Sister Betty, Sister Linda, Brother Taylor. I have pleaded with Brother Mitch. I have pleaded with them and their companions, or their companions through them. I pleaded with my governors. I pleaded with my leaders. Not one of them has stood with me in getting it out. Since January, it's been there. My ministry stopped. It stopped. It died. It stopped. Just as I was reaching for a world outreach, it stopped. It stopped with the radio. It stopped with the TV. It stopped with the printed page. All of the bills got behind. Everything was to the point of a crisis. I said, what's going on? I said, I need some money for this. No money for this. I said, I got to have some money for the cards. No money for the cards. I said, I got to have money to mail this out. No money to mail this out with. I said, but I got to have money for the radio and the TV. No money for that. And everything I went for, there was no money for it. I said, folks, this can't be. I said, when we run $100,000 through the bank to $150,000 a year, I had a bank system up here. I had it coordinated. We paid the bills. The bills got a little behind, but we always had the bills up to date. Everybody seemingly was happy. We was growing. We were still buying. We were paying bills. We were on numbers of radio stations. I said, now we've cut it down to a minimum. And here, I've raised special offerings in buying the boat and the different things to where it had nothing to do with the finance. And the only lag that we had in it was when I was gone off for about 4 weeks in revival. They just let it cave in down at the men's meeting and whatever. I said, this can't be. I said, now we're running $300,000 or more a year to the bank, and we don't have nothing to pay nothing with. I said, that don't make sense. That don't add up. So then the devil had cunningly worked everything to where it was just crashed. Now, this having to do with the law fell across my path. It brought forth death to reproduce my life in George Jr. as it was with Jesus. The same lie. Now, to do this one thing, to bring forth the church, a man-child caught up to the throne, whereby I believe that when I took Rick down the other day, I showed him the mail room that is so piled up with Bibles, with packaged tracts, with bags of mail, so piled up that you can hardly tell heads nor tails of it. It is so piled up. Whereas I had asked them, talking about the system being all right now, though they've made a wilderness out of it, yet the system God gave Moses was perfect. Moses went on to be with God. He was never in a wilderness to begin with. He knew God's will, God's way. He was not in a wilderness. Now, Joshua did not take him out of a wilderness. He told Joshua what to do to get the people out of the wilderness because Moses never was in the wilderness. That wilderness, he had been there for 40 years. He knew every bit of it. He knew where to go, how to get out, and everything else. He led them willingly because God commanded it. He led them willingly into those places to where they did not know where they were going, to reprove them for Christ's sake. Moses could have left any time he wanted to. I believe that knocking the ball around the world. Now, Brother Mitch said to me, said, Brother Pike, if this mail had gone out regular, said, your ministry would be 3 times in the foreign fields what it is. Rick said, I'm going to start today and I'm going to get it out. And getting that mail out, and all of that mail at one time going, it's just about around the world. From San Diego, Chile, around the world, that mail is down there. Just bukus of it. Getting that mail out, putting that mail out there, it'll go around the world, and this thing will revive quickly. I believe that was the ball that was hit. Now, on the other hand, I said that we needed 2 post offices. I had 1 for the foreign mail, 1 for the local mail. They got it into a wilderness. They piled every bit of it into the one office, and you can't make heads or tails of it. Piled up, though it's beautifully packaged, it's neatly packaged, everything is just fine as far as the packaging of it is just fine, but ain't doing nobody a bit of good. Every one that I went to had an excuse. But you know what it was, folks? Figure it any way you want to. The excitement left Jesus, and the excitement left the cause, and the excitement left what God had instigated for us to do, and every office quit worrying about their part, and the excitement moved from the cause to the money. And everybody got their minds on the money, and they couldn't use none of it for God. And I told them before this happened, I said, I perceive something's taking place. I said, now remember, if you get your mind on the money, I said, the first news you know, you'll be using the money here, there, wherever, for this, that, and you will pay the bills here and there and around about, but you won't do anything for my ministry in getting the gospel out. You'll lay that part of it aside. I said, and when you do, it's just like a business. You don't put anything into the business, you won't have any more money coming in. You won't have no business. I said, because that's God. I said, God's business, if it's taken care of, He'll bless it. But you get more interested in just paying the bills on the tangible side, taking care of those things and whatever, whereas we've done that, the light bills and all the other kind of thing. I said, but you're going to find out God's going to frown on it, and He did. And we caught it just before it saw corruption in the sense of decay, of being crushed. The boat represented that. When we bought the boat, the worms working in the hull of it, it indicated just before it saw corruption, the cormorant thing indicates that, as well as indicating the people out here that God is rejected, in that we are born into the lowly state of a manger and we come forth as a sinner. The cormorant, the gullible bird that's always gullible, that is more or less earthbound, he can't fly very high, gullible, that stays around the deep, that answers to the darkness and satanic way of life, in that Leviathan makes the deep to boil like a pot. Staying around that part, the boat had to do with that, and when we tore the lettering off of the back, that said cormorant. When the post was broke, that it might slam itself on the backside end of the concrete to indicate the killing of the cormorant. When the boat was taken just before it saw corruption, in that it was a Canadian vessel to start with, which indicates a heavenly vessel, going over to New Jersey, the New England states, indicates those caught up in the rapture. Killing the cormorant part, it is just since we come home and they dry dock the boat, showing Noah's Ark and coming out into the new world, showing the redemption before corruption, the resurrection, in that the water has to do with the grave. Just since we come home, the communication that we have to have from boat to boat, having to have license, we just sent the license application off and have changed it from the cormorant to the snow white dove. And it is now officially registered in Washington as the snow white dove, which means from the boat to the airplane, the heavenly, from the natural state of your first birth to the change of your celestial body to the heavenly creature. Whereas I said that Paul the Apostle is the only one that has ever been able to really stand and say, not I that live, but Christ that liveth within me, the life I now live, I live with the Son of God, not because he was better than somebody else, but because he had the revelation of it and was the only one that had, the revelation of it. Now, he said, God chose me to reveal Christ in my life. Christ knew the hope of glory. Paul was the one that could do it because he had the revelation. Because the revelation was the resurrection, we find Paul, or that is Jesus, in the midst of the candlesticks at the end, saying, I was dead, I'm alive forevermore. We have the commission and commandment of God that we do not have to go by the way of the grave, that we do not have to see death. Jesus conquered it, stood on the Mount of Transfiguration. He did not have to die. He come back and died for your sake, that you would have the privileges and benefits of bypassing death. Paul had the revelation. He saw this, a mystery. We shall not all sleep. It's out of season. I can't tell you. Now, at the sounding of the trump, the mystery of God would be finished. It is a true fact that you, that me, let's say it like this, that me as an individual, having the experience I did of dying, being resurrected from the dead, indicated one thing, the going over the Jordan, that you are at this moment, after those meetings, at the point of being caught up, as we say, that New Jersey thing, that you are at the point, and the world is at the point of the translation, and the world crisis. You are at the point in to recognize that death is conquered, that you pass from death into life, that you do have the revelational knowledge of the translation, and that the revelation actually is the thing that I used to resurrect myself with through the name Jesus as I came back from the dead. And that you that have received it, you that have acknowledged it, nobody has ever done that in the history of the world but Jesus. Therefore, if that thing was given to me in an experience, as I numbered myself with Jesus in the fellowship of his suffering, then it stands to reason that the secret of the whole thing, as we've said in the past, is the body must die that the spirit might live. That you've got to come to the place to where you don't care for the things of this life and don't want the things of this life, and that the things of God are so much greater that you're going to keep mortifying the deeds of the body and laying aside every fleshly ambition and every fleshly desire until you are truthfully in your heart toward God, completely in your heart related to him in 100% of life and dead to the world. For I am dead to the world by the law or the body of Jesus Christ, Paul said, and alive unto God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Reckon yourselves therefore indeed to be dead unto sin and alive unto God by the body of Jesus' death. Strangely enough, I told this experience, how that at this time fire was to come down out of heaven, devour the appeal to Washington. Brother Isaac, the son of promise, come in immediately with the rules and regulations that had been passed in Washington to the benefit of the church. Hand it to me. Now, we, having passed from death unto life, the strange thing is, as I told this vision, they put it on tape. The tape they put it on already had a title. They were erasing one of my sermons. The title on it, and unawares to them, the title was The Body of This Death. So God named it The Body of This Death. When they got it on there, they realized that the title was The Body of This Death. Somebody said, well, shall we title it? I said, he's already done it. The Body of This Death. So then death is no more than in the body. Lucifer is to blame for it, to be carnally minded. That is the death, because Satan, Lucifer, is a spirit. He's a mind. He's a life. That's infiltrated your body is the only means of death. If you eradicate that from your body, get out the impurities, move that thing out of you, quit being fleshly, quit being carnal, you can have eternal life. If you don't do it, you'll die. It doesn't matter how religious you are or what you say, you'll die. You'll die. To be spiritually minded is life and peace. To be carnally minded is death. To be spiritually minded is the mind of Christ, the tree of life. To be carnally minded is the mind of Lucifer, which is death. Death. And you can let your passions rise up over you. You can let them be gullible and yield to them and lose life in the spirit. Or you can overcome them and do away with the beast part, put it back where it was at when it took your life into captivity. That is to say, when it took life into captivity in the garden through the beast means. You can either get rid of it and put that beast part back where it was, kill it out, and have life eternal as the Son of God before this happened in the garden through the fall of the tree of knowledge, where Satan got his advantage. Or you can go on and be a beast and come under the regime of the beast, head up in the beast system, which is fast coming. For if you are a beast, you're not a God, which is the Son of God. You're not an eternal creature. So then, folks, I somewhere in this experience come to the place to where somehow or another it went beyond the human body to God's pleasure, to the extent that it registered, as we would say, to the ultimate of the completion, of what he had ordained us to be able to make that change and bypass the grave and to be resurrected. That which the church is ordained to come to. Now, you're going to be judged according to your works. That doesn't mean day by day, each deed that you have done. It means the kind of works that you have had in your lifetime. Whereas you're stumbling, staggering, day-by-day deeds, God is going to be considerate. But I tell you one thing. Jesus said, what I say to one, I say to all, every living individual that's here, young or old, that can understand what I'm saying. There is no grace to any individual until they have done their very best to the ultimate to live perfect. Then if they stumble, then they have grace. If they have not tried to live perfect, to even bring their thoughts into subjection, to cast down imagination and be perfect in their thinking, grace does not apply to them. Only on the level of their undeveloped life of being immature and not understanding. If they don't understand, grace applies according to their understanding. He gives out grace and requires of them according to their development and maturing. Whereas if you use it for a crutch, saying, I don't know, when you had plenty of time to learn, the law, even the natural law, will tell you that ignorance won't suffice when it comes to transgressing the law, as long as there's a law present where you can know about it. So you haven't heard, haven't known these things in the world, you're in trouble. There is a person sitting here right now that's a little too carnal, a woman, thinking a little too highly of herself. Her spirit comes into the Spirit of God and to me as I stand here. She ought not to do it. Fine woman. But it's just that much carnality can cause you to be lost. So you need to be humble. You need to esteem others better than yourself. You need to think, look upon the things of another, not look on the things of your own, because in doing it, you're just going to be in trouble. All right, I'm going to try to say these few words and try to close. I've tried to just put a few things together to where you at least can understand what we're saying. At this point, we should be ready to enjoy a real milk and honey. a real land of milk and honey, to use our faith, even in the natural here, to be able to enjoy it. God is blessing us. God will bless us. It indicates the millennium coming in. And you can have the benefits and blessings of God if you want to. Little Bethlehem has gone through a crisis, a great crisis. But I'm going to tell you something, folks. You're going to have to quit boycotting against one another. You're going to have to quit willfully doing things just to make it hard on me. I've said this a lot of times, and I say it again. When I was a little boy, I used to have to go down the woods to cut the wood, the cordwood, or whatever we was using, the firewood. Had about 100, 200, 300 acres, 500 acres. I don't know how much it was. It was a great plantation. Go down there with the mule, the wagon, the horses, whatever, way down in the woods, get a lot of stumps. Come back to start the fire in the old fireplace. Coming out of there, sometimes I'd jump on the wheel and ride the wheel, and when we'd ride to the top, jump over in the wagon. I know you've done it. Walk out the tongue of the wagon, ride the wagon, or get on the horse and ride him out, whatever. But at times, my foolishness, I just sat on the back of the wagon, hold the wagon, and I'd stick my foot down against the ground. And I'd hold with all my might, foolishly like, because it didn't even faze those two mules or horses that was in front. But they just pull and go right on, carrying the load, and my foolishness too. Dad always kept us boots because of snakes and whatever in the winter. But I learned one thing. I always messed up the sole of my shoe. When I do that, before I realize it, I done have a hole in my shoe. I messed up the sole of my shoe, and that meant that Daddy was going to be on my head. Daddy'd get me for sure, because back there you didn't get shoes every day. You had to make them last to wear pasteboard in the soles of them. But it is a true fact that later years, I heard the Lord speak to me, and He said, "Son, if you make it hard on the horses, you'll wear out the sole." Said, "Any time you drag your feet, make it hard on the horses, you're going to wear out your sole." Some of you have really made it hard on the horses. You've drug your feet, and some of you has all but wore out your soul. And folks, you take my advice, you'll quit your foolishness, and you'll run for your life, and you'll realize that you are despised and abhorred of the Lord. You that are not keeping up your office, and you that will not go in and do the thing God appointed you to, you that will stand at the door and half-heartedly not take the responsibility or take the responsibility, you God is upset at. He said, "I'll spew you out of my mouth." He's upset with you. You that have not done anything, He's upset with you, but not like the ones that have gotten in the way that's kept us from having somebody to do things. A lot of you that have not done anything, you would have done something if you had had a chance, if the others had got out of the way and had not been so evil as they were, to let a devil use them to steal their soul and to keep God from His victory. The Bible said, "Blessed is the man that sitteth not in the seat of the scornful, nor standeth in the way of sinners, whose delight is in the laws of the Lord." He delights in the laws of the Lord. He meditates in them day and night. "This man shall be like a tree that's planted by the water. He'll bring forth his fruit in his season. His leaves shall not wither. Whatever he does will prosper." You that are not doing anything, you need to get on the job, or it's going to be too late. You that are standing at the door, you need to get out of the way and let somebody do something pretty quick, or the Lord is going to tear you into pieces. The Bible said, "Beware you that forget God, lest I tear you into pieces." Now, He suffered it through these months because of His type, His shadow. It's supposed to go through the crisis to where it can come back up. But if you think Brother Pike is playing a game and he's just kidding you, from here on out, you take an office, you take a place, you drag it out. You don't be concerned about it and see if the Lord don't literally tear you up. Now you see if I'm telling you right. You be presumptuous and do things that you don't have no business doing. You be presumptuous and backbite and cause problems and cause division and cause all manner of wrongs. And you boycott against one another. And you let things willingly pile up, to not letting the proper authorities get it just to make it look bad on them. when it's going to be bad to me or for me or the kingdom of God. From here on out, you do it and see what happens to you. The Lord will make a believer out of you. You turn one of your offices into a gossiping center or whatever. Now, I said all of this, and you turn your home into a gossiping center and see what happens to you from here on out. Start finding fault, cutting down the brethren. Somebody had a vision. They come to me yesterday. Said, as a brother, I saw him standing behind the others. This was a leading brother, a minister. Said, stand behind the others. And while we were trying to fight the enemy and shoot the enemy, said he was trying to shoot us in the back. Now, God is watching everything you do and I do. Everything. A lot of times I don't say nothing to you about your condition. But as I live before God, the Lord reveals it to me. And if I said anything about it, it would literally tear you up. Because the first thing that you would say, well, I wondered if he knew. I kind of wondered if maybe he did. But it's the true fact he actually does know. And it would tear you to pieces because some of you need some help. You need some help in some things. You need some help. You need to do something. Now, I love you as an individual. That is, as a Christian, I want to help you. I'm your shepherd. I'll do anything I can for you. But you're going to have to submit to the shepherd for the shepherd to help you. There ain't no other way. The Bible said, submit yourselves unto them as they that watch for your souls. As long as you're going to take your own self-will, do your own thing, go your own way, plan your own life, there ain't nothing I can do to help you. You're going to have to submit. The governors and leaders of Little Bethlehem need to do something. The paper spoke of one of our governors, of what one of our governors said, one of the governors of Little Bethlehem, in the paper. They acknowledged what he said. Whereas the people that know that you're in leadership, they have reverence and respect to you because they know the power of leadership and authority. And if those men have authority in a natural thing that's going to burn, be thrown aside, how much more important is it when God commissions men unto eternal purposes of his own accord and for his own good pleasure? If you be one of those that be as it was with Stephen's, a deacon in the church, or a bishop, or a leader, whatever, of the ministry, or anything else, then it is required of them that they be loyal and faithful in all things. The Bible said, ordain these men to positions that's above reproach. Of them that are without, you've got to keep out of reproach out there. You can't have a reproach and have people saying ugly things about you and be a leader. No matter how much we ordain your leader, God doesn't accept you as his leader. You must meet his qualifications. You must meet his way of life. The Bible said his wife must be faithful. When it comes to his children, of those that are at home, he must have them under subjection with all gravity. If we do not fit these bills, we're not God's leaders. You cannot help that those children do that are grown and gone, other than the fact that you should have planted righteousness in their heart to bring them back. You can't help it. They're on their own then. Job's children was killed because of their foolishness. But he protected them while they were little. God watched after them. He'll do yours the same way if you live right. All right, I want you to stand with me. I've got a lot more things I'd like to have said concerning the visions, experiences, or whatever. But I just said those few things that you might be benefited by them. I hope you're benefited by them. I hope that they'll be a benefit to you. I hope you'll consider. People are being aroused all over the country. And they're ready to take your crowns, folks. Beware lest it happen unto you as it did the Jews. When he said, I gave you a vineyard all these many years. I come seeking fruit on it. You didn't give me any. He said, why cumbereth it the ground? Cut the tree down. Cut the tree down. With the vineyard, said, take the vineyard from them and give it to another that will bring forth fruit. Beware, because you come mighty close to this very thing. The Lord put this vineyard in Olive Branch, Mississippi. He put it in their midst, and I told them. I said, but you're going to scorn it, carelessly neglect it, not support it. I said, and not care for it, and he's going to take it out of your midst. I said, it's going to be sorrow and heartaches to you. There's been death of wives, death of children, heartaches, poverty, woes, problems. I said, until you say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Blessed. Blessed. I wish I could do something. I'll do anything. Blessed. Blessed. Pleading for us to come to their homes. Pleading. But their houses are left unto them desolate. Don't let it happen to you folks. Don't let it happen to us. Don't think we're special. God would do it to me. He'd do it to you. He'd do it to any of us. But just remember, my little experience is one thing, and that is to be a time marker in the program of God or the issues of God or the transition of God. A time marker to let you know how late it is and where you're living and what you need to do and what you can have out of the potentiality that's in your possession if you're willing to utilize the God-given ability and pull away from the things of the world and forget about the desires of the flesh. All right, let's sing this little chorus together. I thank you for your interest, your patient listening, and I hope it'll do you some good, because the only interest I have here in anything that I'm doing is toward you. My interest is for your benefit, towards you, for your good, to help you make it into the kingdom of God, and trusting that I likewise will do the same. Sing that again now. I love him. Can you sing it? I love him because Jesus first loved me, and he purchased my salvation on Calvary's tree. Can you sing it with me again now? I love him. I love him because he first loved me, and he purchased my salvation on Calvary's tree. Now, I'm going to ask Brother Richard the Jew if he'll come up here and dismiss us. Would you come up here, Richard? I want to say again, we appreciate you. Thank the Lord for you. Don't forget the services tonight. Let the Lord bless us. Come and let's be blessed. Come believing. Don't let church be a routine of just going into the church, but enter into the house with thanksgiving and praise. And don't let yesterday have nothing to do with today. Today is a new endeavor altogether. Let's lay up something today for the future. Paul's saying, I'm persuaded to believe that he's able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that great day, saying that we should lay up these things toward the great day of that reaping. Now, lay up treasures in heaven where thieves don't break through and steal and moth doesn't corrupt. Wherever your treasure is, your heart will be there also. Jesus said that. Now, come into the house of God as a new experience every time. Listening, wanting to grow in the grace of knowledge. Wanting to be ready. Wanting to be ready. Be also ready, for in such hours you think not the Son of Man cometh. Be ready. Watch. He said, what I say unto you, or one I say unto all. Watch. Pray ye always, that you may be accounted worthy to escape those things that's coming on the earth. For as a snare shall it come upon all them that dwell on the earth. In the hour they think not.